That's Eric Bibb, the son of the late Leon Bibb. He's Leon Bibb's little boy, although he's 70 years old now and still going strong. That's very good. And that is one of my favorite songs because it's so uplifting. It comes from the album Diamond Days, which was released in 2006. And I just thought I would give you a taste of it today. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lee, and we pick up from where we left off with each other just yesterday. I want to commend you for making yesterday a very lively program by, jumping in there and putting your 2 cents in. That's great. That's what the program is for, to encourage thought. It's not a matter of whether you're right or wrong. It's whether you have a considered opinion that you'd like to share. And this way we build community of thought. And that was remarkable to me yesterday. It's not the first time it happened, but it was particularly noteworthy yesterday. Well, in just 7 days, President Biden will end the U.S. rescue mission in Afghanistan. He says that's going to be the firm deadline in 7 days. And the question is, what happens after that? Because we know that the Taliban, the people who are have taken back the country, the leadership of the country, they say they will not allow Afghans to leave the country, and they won't agree to extend the deadline to evacuate those wanting to leave under U.S. protection. So we have the gauntlet thrown down. How that is going to be resolved, we don't know. Whether it will evolve into something else, a new crisis, we don't know. But we do know that Biden is insisting that he will maintain his deadline. And the deadline is the end of August. This is a very eye-opening thing when you study it and you look at the psychology involved. What is the psychology of these people, all of them, including Biden? There is no right or wrong here. There's no right or wrong. And we should refrain from looking at these kinds of developments from that perspective. There's nothing that's right and nothing that's wrong. It's just that one side wants to do this, the other side wants to do that. And they're prepared, or at least this is the way they're sounding, they're prepared to get very militant about it. Where does that leave the people? They don't care. They're in charge. And their feeling is we'll just have to live with their decisions. They're in charge. So come the end of August, August 31st, what do you think the situation, what do you think the situation will be? And why is it in the United States people are not really too alarmed about it? They're not particularly pressured about it. They just figure, well, we have all we need to pulverize our enemies and We'll just have to see whether the enemy is smart enough to withdraw before things get to the point where bombs are dropped and bullets are flying and so forth. But, you know, we've seen how countries behave before. We've seen that. And here you have so many setups for conflict. Biden says he's set his target date. He's not moving from it. He is going to go ahead and rescue. He's going to order the rescue of people who are committed to being rescued. And he will proceed with that plan, which is a military plan. The Taliban, on the other hand, the people who now rule Afghanistan, are saying they will not permit people to leave. They will not allow Joe Biden to have the authority to set a schedule for them and the people who supposedly are awaiting rescue, that they're in charge, this is their country, they call the shots. And they will not allow Biden to call the shots. So conflict, of course, it's the season. Tis the season to have conflict. So I was wondering what you're thinking about this. Trump and Biden so far have gotten nowhere with the Taliban. And the Taliban doesn't seem to be particularly afraid of taking a particular position and holding to it. This, in their view, is what sovereignty is all about, and they consider themselves a sovereign state, whether people agree with that or not. But they're in charge, and they have the guns, and they have the ammunition, and they have the people. How will this play out? In your head, how is it going to end? It's just a few days. What do you think is likely to happen between now and August the 31st? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. This is not a what is right, what is wrong question. This is a question that asks you to take a look at developments so far, weigh them, and see whether you see any way out, any reasonable way out, without a full-scale war, which we already are involved in, by the way. It is a full-scale war. Tony from Orlando, you're on the air. How are you doing? Haven't heard from you in a while.
I'm doing fine, Trees. Thanks for asking.
Great. What are your thoughts on the subject? How is it likely to unfold? Come the 31st?
I believe by the 31st, Biden will cease operations in Afghanistan. From what I understand, the head of the CIA and one of the top leaders of the Taliban had gotten together this week to discuss an extension to get some of the Americans that might be in remote areas out of Afghanistan, because the military has some concerns about not meeting that deadline. And the Taliban said no, that they will stick to the August 31st deadline and that military operations must end by that date. So I believe that, and I believe that yesterday Biden reiterated those commitments to end the operations on August 31st. So I believe it's going to end on the 31st, and whoever's in Afghanistan is going to have a tough time trying to get out.
Yep. The Taliban is saying they're not going to allow anyone to leave after the agreed upon deadline date.
Correct. Yeah. So, like I said, they went back to request an extension, and the extension was denied. So that's when yesterday evening Biden came out and said that they're going to try to get as many people out as possible, meaning that at the end of the day on August 31st, whoever's out is out, and whoever's not out is stuck in Afghanistan.
What is a psychological game being played here?
Well, the Taliban pretty much is calling the shots. They said, you get out when you get out. And the United States right now is looking really bad as far as the way they rolled this whole operation out, because instead of getting the civilians out, and not only just the civilians, but the military equipment that has been left behind, billions and billions of dollars worth of military equipment. From what I understand, they left about 45 Black Hawk helicopters. They left over 600,000 M16 rifles, shoulder rocket-propelled, launchers. They left biometric equipment that can scan people's fingerprints, and they have data on there, which is what the Taliban is using to go door-to-door to see who was cooperating with the Americans. They left a lot of equipment behind and a lot of, top-secret information that can be used against the United States in the future. It is looking really, 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 really bad for the United States right now.
Do you think there's a chance, and considering the demeanor of Joe Biden, do you think there's a chance that things can escalate to full-scale warfare out of this?
No, I don't think so. I think Joe Biden is going to take it as it is. The only war that's going to might break out is here in the United States in Washington, because he really put not only the United States, but the rest of the international community in harm's way. He's going through with this August 31st deadline. And I think he's just going to go through with it, and the military has to do as they're told. And I don't think there's going to be war as far as this is concerned, as far as this operation of getting out of Afghanistan.
Well, you gave us a good start to the subject today. I thank you very much for offering it. And we have to keep it in mind as we go along, because you gave us quite a comprehensive view today. Thank you, Tony. Ed, from Queens, what do you think is likely to happen come the end of August?
Good afternoon, Eutrice. How are you?
Hi. Okay. Thanks.
I come at it from a historical context, and also I've had about 4 or 5 years in the military, and I was with Desert Storm 1, so I know I've got a little bit of insight towards that region. You've got to remember one thing. We've got to remember a couple of things. One of the main things is the Taliban is a creation of the United States. It was the Mujahideen separatist groups that were fighting Russians, supported by the United States. If you're familiar with the movie Charlie Wilson's War, it gives you an overview of it. But the United States created the Taliban. It were a group of disassociated Mujahideen that united to fight the Russians. Afghanistan has been called the graveyard of empires from the time of Alexander the Great to the Ottoman Turks. Afghanistan is a very hard country to fight, and the people are tough. They unify. So Biden's deadline, that's Biden's way out. He's not going to push past it. I don't think there's going to be any open warfare between the United States and the Taliban per se, but there are a lot of underground and covert operations that are continuing over there, and there are a lot of soldiers of fortune, for want of a better word, black ops. You've got the different contractors that are still present in the region and will be present in the region, and they will do the U.S. bidding. So that being said, on the surface, we're going to have the deadline met. Key players are already out. As far as the materials that were left over there, you can look at the same thing happened in Saigon. The United States left back millions of dollars of equipment, materials, and weapons that the North Vietnamese used and continued to use well into the 1980s, 1990s. And the same thing is true in Afghanistan. Those engines of war are going to continue to be used. As far as sensitive data, believe me, from personal experience, all of the sensitive material that could cause detriment to the United States has been removed a long time ago. Whatever sensitive material they have, whatever machinery they have, is, my personal opinion, been declassified a long time ago and was left behind. Whatever was of any value, of any relevance, was probably burnt in burnt pits, because that's what we did during Gulf War I. So, like I said, that being said, on the surface, the deadline will come and go, but the region will be unstable, and that's by design, by a number of players in that region, from the United States to Israel to Saudi Arabia. That region has to be destable because oil and gas and precious minerals come out of that region, and the instability is how the Western world extracts money from that region.
What does that do to the reputation, if you will, or the credibility as a leader for Biden?
Well, I mean, Biden is what he is. I mean, you have to look at the history of Biden, too. He's a laissez-faire player. He keeps things in perspective. He's a middle-of-the-road guy. You know, I mean, he's not known for any type of militant or powerful stance. He likes to keep things status quo. And in that region of the world, confusion is the playground for those people. In the confusion, they can extract the wealth. In the confusion, they can extract political favors. In the confusion, they can have their puppet government set up and control the land the way they see fit. The confusion is their playground, and that's the way they want to keep it. And Biden is a servant of empire.
Is there not something to be said that a ragtag group, a group that basically had no reputation except what they said they were, but coming up against the United States and forcing concessions from it so far, what does that say about the United States and how it is viewed in the world community?
Like I said, Afghanistan historically has been called the graveyard of empires. The Afghani people are proud people, and when faced with a common enemy, with a common threat, they unite and they fight. They push the Russians out. They push the Ottoman Turks out. And of course they're going to push the United States out. Especially when you've got volunteer army that's really not motivated, that's coming over there in a foreign land, fighting for something that they really don't have a stake in. It's hard to beat a man in his own house, and you're in his house. The Russians found that out. The Ottoman Turks, the Romans, even the Romans found that out. The Afghani people are hard to beat. The problem is they are hard also to unify. They have different factions in the country, and once the common threat is gone, then they have a tendency historically to fight amongst themselves. And if there could be a charismatic leader that rises above that and could unite it, they'd be a formidable adversary to anyone. But as far as invading by foreign forces, they proved to be historically unsuccessful.
Thank you, Ed. That was a very nice tour you gave us there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Patricia from New York, how are you doing?
Good afternoon, you, Teresa, and I hope you continue to do well. And good afternoon.
Thank you.
To the PRN family. I absolutely agree with Ed that absolutely nothing is going to happen. This deadline is going to come and it's going to go. There will be behind-the-scenes negotiations so that everybody saves face. What Americans don't understand, which is what Ed pointed out, when you look at Vietnam and you look at Afghanistan, they fight for ethnic pride. They fight for a principle that is higher than money, that is higher than anything. They fight for their lives. They fight for themselves. We don't have that. And that's what makes it so difficult, even when you have military might. That's what makes it so difficult to fight a people who are so united, they will go to their death rather than allow you to subjugate them. So the deadline will come and go. Whatever was left behind will be left behind. You know, it might be usable, it might not be usable, but the deadline will come and go. Everybody will figure out a way. They'll engage in discussions behind the scenes. And the United States will be negotiating from a position of weakness, not from a position of strength. And the Taliban knows this. So whatever, you know, each side needs to do, maybe the Taliban will extract concessions from the U.S., but whatever they need to do, they're going to do. Because on the one hand, one of the reasons that they went in there, in addition to all of the mineral resources, was oil. Well, the United States no longer needs oil. They are number two in oil production because of fracking in this country. So while there are other mineral resources, one of the main reasons, which was oil, they don't need that reason anymore. And they have other fish to fry. They've got to figure out what to do with all of these cyber attacks that really is a threat to the survival of this country. And we saw that with the attack on the pipeline and the cyber attack on the hacking. On the meat industry earlier this year. They need to take whatever resources they expended and now redirect it to other issues. Hacking, they need to figure out what to do with all of those cyber threats from Russia. They have other fish to fry, so they need to get out, and they're going to get out by whatever means they need to get out, and so that deadline will come and go, and that'll be the end of it.
Has the damage done to the United States, especially with Biden at the head of it, is it irreparable or can it be restored? The reputation of the country restored.
At this point, it doesn't matter. You know, Biden is just a figure. It doesn't matter. Whoever was in power at this particular point, somebody had to figure out what to do with Afghanistan. It started under Trump in terms of what to do with Afghanistan. And so Biden just completed the event. In terms of what this does to the United States in terms of their reputation, well, clearly it has been damaged. Now, whether that damage is irreparable remains to be seen, but it clearly has been damaged.
In as much as it has been damaged, the typical response by the United States would be to become even more warlike, to assert or to affirm or to reaffirm its authority in the world community. Do you expect that to happen?
They are so weak, and I don't see how that happens. They are wounded. And it's going to take some time for them to lick those wounds. I don't see that happening anytime soon. And as I said before, they have other issues that they have to redirect themselves to. As wounded as they are, they're going to have to figure out, okay, we now have a new war, and it's A, B, C, and D. And so they will not have an opportunity to even take a deep breath. They need to get out of Afghanistan and go on to the next order of business.
Thank you. Thanks for your analysis today, Patricia. Really, very, very enlightening. Thank you so much. We take this break and come back to continue the conversation. We're talking about the deadline date of August the 31st, by which both, now we have it from both the U.S. through Biden and through the Taliban, both committed to ending the presence of the United States in Afghanistan by that day. What happens next, we don't know. That's what we're talking about today. We'll be right back. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Yatrice Lead, and we're talking about the situation in Afghanistan, and we're talking about the respective positions of the United States and the Afghan, the Taliban government in Afghanistan now. How is it going to turn out come the end of the month? Is it going to be resolved? Is it going to lead to even more warfare? We don't know, but we're talking about it. Rich from New York City, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm hoping that Biden will follow through with his commitment of leaving, and the military-industrial complex with their propaganda about what's going to happen. I think that they want them to stay, but look at the money that they're going to be losing. I look at Vietnam. They said the same thing about Vietnam. It's going to be a bloodbath when they leave. Blah, blah. It didn't happen. These people are living like they want to live. And now, today, I was reading where Pamela Harris is over there, you know, in Vietnam, talking about, you know, how we're all friends and all that, and how they should be getting, you know, putting together a package so they can combat the Chinese. But it's a military-industrial complex that's causing all of this confusion. And then it's only the U.S., it's what they call the G7, Canada, Europe, and all those other guys. Why aren't they putting pressure on them to stay there? My wife works for the GA, and these veterans are going up there, you know, all hands blown up, legs blown off. The government don't want to take care of them. I wouldn't want my sons or my daughters to be going somewhere for nothing. So I'm hoping he will follow through with his commitment of getting out of there. It's the UN should be taking the responsibility to stabilizing the country if they want to be stabilized.
But if the UN takes charge of this, then that actually reinforces the role of the United States. It relegates the United States to even less importance. Don't you think?
No, I don't. I mean, if the UN you had a group of nations there. They should, and like I said, it's not only the U.S. You got other countries that was involved in it. England, Canada, the G7, as they call themselves, or the white nations. They should be taking responsibilities to stabilizing, or if the people want to get out, help them out. But why is it all purging on us in this country to do something that everybody else is responsible for? I'm just hoping this guy...
It's because, in a way, the United States started it. The U.S. government started this mess, George Bush.
Yeah, but everybody else followed him. They should be taking responsibilities for it, too. England, Canada, the rest of the countries that call themselves, that all those countries gathered into on this one little country, had no army, no nothing, to hunt for this one guy, Bin Laden. Well, Bin Laden is gone, as they say, he's dead. But I don't think this thing should be continued, and I would be very, very disappointed if he, if the news media and those that want to see this thing accelerate and stay there longer. It doesn't make any sense at all. None. When you got all of these people sleeping on the streets in this country, when you we don't have any health care, you're spending billions and billions. Well, how much did this thing cost us? $2 trillion or more? And they don't want to give people health care here? Yes, come on out. Maybe somebody can push him in the directions where he can say, yeah, we'll take that money and put it in our country with this $3 trillion infrastructure bill that they want to put through. You know, so I'm hoping he will follow through with his commitment to come on out of there. And if people, if they, eventually there'll be some trauma. And it's a shame if you're looking at the pictures of the country, how it's all torn up, beat up. But the UN should step in and say, well, we're going to help all of the countries that were involved in this. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your contribution today, Rich. I'm glad you called. Jean from Maryland, what are your thoughts about the impending date, the deadline date? What is likely to happen prior to it? What is likely to happen after it? Are you there? I just heard a lot of phone bugaboos going on there. Okay, so we might have lost you. Call back if you're hearing anything, because we certainly can't hear you. Brother David from Brooklyn, you're on the air. How are you?
Good afternoon, Utrice. And I've been thinking about what's been said, and what comes to my mind, the Taliban would be very wrong, I believe, in telling the Americans, oh, don't forget about the deadline of 31st of August, and you can stay a little longer. I don't think that would be a good strategy for them to go ahead and deal with Americans in that way. So I think they will probably stand firm on the date that has been agreed upon. The other thing that comes to my mind is when you use the word sovereignty. And to me, as far as the American empire is concerned, nobody has sovereignty in the world. People's sovereignty cannot trump American empire. And as far as that goes to Afghanistan also. So from the beginning, the United States Empire had no business going to Afghanistan in the first place. If you have some problem with an individual in a country, you appeal to the designated people in that country to expedite, to extradite the person. And you don't just send your army over there and cause that type of destruction that the United States did. So it's wrong. And the other part of this, we're talking about Biden now. Biden, as I see him, a leopard does not change his spots. Biden is another Republican in Democrat clothing. We have a situation where we have two Republican parties, one to the far, far right and one to the left of that, and that's the one Biden is in, and that's called a Democrat Party. So the point is that the situation, people have got to understand that the United States represents does not regard anyone's sovereignty more than it involves their own ability as an empire to do what they want. Now, as far as empires are concerned, especially in the place of the United States in the last few years or so, even these big moves by empire to go places like Vietnam and Iraq and Syria and whatnot, the United States has been losing. And it shows that local people can rise up against an empire. It's a big price, but quite often they can win. And when I think about terrorism, I not only think about small groups of people in various places, but I think about national terrorism. I mean, what we're looking at is terrorism by the American government. When Obama sits around and decides who he's going to murder every week during his administration, to me, that's terrorism. That's terrorism with all the intelligence agencies that the United States has that go around and dispatch people 12 months a year. So this thing about terrorism is something that applies not only to small individual groups, but also to nations. One part that comes to mind is that many of us have been talking about things started with Bush. I see things in Afghanistan starting with Carter before Reagan came in, when at that time, I think there was a progressive government in Afghanistan, and the Russians came in to support that government. I don't think they just invaded. And the United States saw that as an opportunity to involve during the Carter administration. So I don't give Carter a pass on this whole situation. So that's the way I see it.
Thank you, sir. Thanks a lot for your contribution today. Gene from Maryland, you're back. We thought we lost you.
Yes, Utrice, I am back. Thank you. Thank you for taking the call.
That's all right. Thank you. What are your thoughts about this pending date, August the 31st? What will happen leading up to it, and what will happen after it, in your view?
Well, leading up to it, I think I agree with Ed and Patricia that that date is going to come and it's going to go. I don't believe that the Taliban are going to fold to the noises that the Americans are making with respect to extensions and not negotiating from a position of strength and all that kind of stuff that we're hearing in the U.S. media. I think the Taliban are going to stand their ground, and they're going to hold on to that date, and they're going to force the Americans to maintain it. I think we're already seeing that with the kinds of roadblocks and checkpoints that they're beginning to put in place now around getting to the airport. So along with that, I think we should take a moment to take a look at the people of Afghanistan. And I think that's really what we should be talking about with respect to what happens after the date of the 30th. With all the people that are being evacuated now, and we saw this previously in Iraq, the people that get evacuated are the people that can be evacuated. They have money. They have education. They have resources. They have friends abroad. And these are the people that are your doctors, your teachers, your university professors, etc. And so the question then becomes, from the Taliban's perspective, what's left in our country? Who's going to tend to our wounded? Who's going to educate our children? And if they are to be the leadership of that country. I think we need to pay attention to what happens if that resource of people is removed. You're going to see a country that can't support itself, can't take care of itself, and can't do anything with respect to the kinds of things that a country needs to support an economy and support its people. And I think that is what we're going to begin to see after the 30th.
At the same time, doesn't that emerging control scare you? Aren't you concerned about the history of the Taliban and what it might mean for the future, the immediate future of Afghanistan?
Totally. I 100% agree with you. But the point that I'm making, I'm not taking the Taliban side here at all. What I'm really trying to point out is that we have seen this before with this question of the brain drain and what's left behind after all the people who are capable of managing a society have been taken out. You're left with a large group of people who are basically ungovernable. And it's the U.S. that has caused this, and we've seen it before. And that's the point I'm making.
That's a very strong point. And thank you for raising that. That's an extremely important point that you raise here. Thank you. You are worth waiting for. How about that?
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for calling in and contributing. David from San Francisco, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Therese. I'm more thinking about the super spreader possibilities with COVID. And if we were to have any sympathy for the people of Afghanistan, they're going to get their country back, but they're going to have it in not only a wrecked condition, but they'll have an epidemic besides. So it crosses my mind that we have a great opportunity if the states of Texas and Florida and some of the other states are refusing to take the vaccines, then maybe we could ship those vaccines over there and offer them to the people of Afghanistan to not only have an ability to have some preventative measures, but in addition, it would be an opportunity, as you know, with the vaccines that it takes about a week or so for it to take effect, and we don't want tens of thousands of people coming into the country who would be sick and spreading the epidemic. So if we were to then rent all of the hotel rooms in Kabul and build up the food supply enough so that everybody would be fed three meals a day and whatnot, it would build up the so-called tourist economy in Afghanistan so that they would have a sort of a peacetime economy after we left. Yeah, everything would be built up to scale after we left, and that not only would the Afghanis have an opportunity to get the vaccine, all of the people, attempting to leave would have a period of time to calm down before they hopped on the plane and flew out. So it just really seems to me preventing a super spreader and then giving the Afghanis an opportunity to rebuild a peacetime economy would really do a lot toward calming things down.
So you're talking peacetime, and I'm talking about the prospect of war continuing.
Right?
Which will it be?
Oh, it's awful.
Which will
it be? Yeah, I know, it's awful. If you remember... Yeah, if you remember all the way back to Jimmy Carter is when the Russians were in there. And then, they were followed even before 9/11. There was basically no peace in Afghanistan. And so for 40 years now, they've had their country just beat to death. When the United States went in there hunting for bin Laden in the very beginning, we were only in there for 2 or 3 weeks when the generals finally said, we've blasted this country to bits. There isn't a single target that's worth hitting anymore. And that's when George Bush set his sights on Iraq. And, you know, we were using million-dollar missiles to beat to blow up $5 shacks. And it was just a shame, you know, the military-industrial complex was making a fortune by just wasting weapons on what little the Afghanis had. So, and that was 20 years ago. So this country has been, you know, Afghanistan has been beaten enough, and they've got to get some peacetime thinking in there, some peacetime economy restarted. And it would seem to me that we have a great opportunity by offering vaccines that, you know, Texans and Floridians are refusing to take. It would be not only a peace offering, but it would be a salve to the people in the Middle East who are going to be stuck with an epidemic after this panic is over.
Does it sound like either side wants to talk about peace right now?
That's a good point. I have no illusions that the military-industrial complex are you know, champing at the bit to sell more weapons and to keep more fear going. I was reviewing some of my old call-in shows right after 9/11 and reminding people that the Garden of Eden was thought to be between the Tigris and Euphrates River, which is actually up in Iraq, but that we blew up the Garden of Eden in order to search for one man. And that we've essentially created a war to blow up the Garden of Eden in order to have a war. And that was 20 years ago. So I think the Middle East has had enough of war, and it would sure be a salve to them all to really think about a world at peace, especially now when we're looking at the global warming. It's bad enough here in the United States where temperatures are rising to, you know, 115, 120, but in the Middle East, they're talking about it could potentially get up to 140, 160 degrees. If global warming really gets carried away. So, you know, not only rebuilding the environment there in the Middle East, not only in Afghanistan, but other parts of it, these are the last moments that the Earth has before everything becomes a horrible desert. We've got to create oases all throughout the Middle East so that they can have seed supplies and the opportunity for agriculture. If we ignore this opportunity, you know, of creating peace, the military-industrial complex has a vested interest in creating fear.
Well, thank you. You were worth waiting for. Thank you so much for calling
in
today.
Peace be with us. Peace be with us.
Thank you. E from Edgewater, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Eatrice, and I'm glad to hear you're doing a little better than you were.
Yeah, I'm hanging in there.
Yeah.
Just to frustrate my enemies.
That's a good plan. That's a very good plan. I do the same thing. I've been doing that since for the last 60 years.
What are your thoughts about this situation as it has developed so far?
Yeah, I mean, this is all about, like you were saying, what's news? Is this news or is this propaganda? Are we being told the truth? Are we being lied to? What can be trusted? What can be assumed? What is all these things are involved? Maybe they left the weapons on purpose so that the Taliban can use it on their people that don't want to conform to what they want them to conform to. Or maybe they can use them on their neighbor country. and they can make war with them. So it can be more killing going on. Maybe that's why we left all this equipment there and stuff. You think we just made a stupid blunder? Well, Joe Biden could do that, but I mean, there's other people there to give him advice. We just made a stupid decision to pull everybody, the military out, and then after we're going to try to get the other people out. It's so ridiculous. I can't even believe we're discussing it. It's such a made-up story. The thing is, they're killing people. Doesn't this remind you what Hillary did in Libya and Yemen and Syria, where we left these people to suffer to the ISIS? The same kind of thing. We go into these countries, we make like we're going to build up their military so they can protect themselves, and then we leave them. And then when the ISIS come and attack them, they throw the guns down, they run for the coast, and they get on boats and risk their life to go across the Mediterranean, and now they're living like in squalor in camps, in refugee camps. And this could have happened to everybody that is poor, that is not able to have a good family tree, you know? It's all about money. It's all about so many things, Yatrice. Why should we just assume that this is the line that we're following is true?
So do you expect Biden to go through with this or to be compelled by the Taliban to observe strictly the deadline?
Like I said, maybe they want them to, maybe we're going to go back to get the equipment so that we left it there so we have a reason to go back if things start to get out of hand. Who knows? I just said a whole lot of stuff that I can't go along with this kind of a narrative of what I'm seeing going on in the world where we're being forced to get a vaccination that could possibly kill you. And if you don't get it, then you're not able to go to the movies anymore. And that's a tragedy to the world. I can't enjoy my life anymore. The life that I enjoyed for my first 30 years has not been the same. But I don't know. I don't know. People seem to take this all in stride. And it's no big deal what's going on. But, you know, it's very similar to what happened in the Middle East. And now it's happened here in Afghanistan. And there's new things to go on to. And the main thing seems to be this vaccine thing. This Afghanistan thing might be just been done to distract us from that while they're making sure people getting their shots and it gets done. And I don't know where that's going to leave anybody that doesn't want to get.
We're out of time, E, but thank you for making your contribution today. Thanks so much for calling. Thank you all for calling in and contributing to the conversation. Stay tuned. Keep it right here on PRN, the station that keeps you in the know. Coming up next, Dr. Peter Resnick's Toolbox with Dr. Peter Resnick right after this. So thanks again. We'll talk again tomorrow. Bye-bye.